This podcast is proudly sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters, a Catholic fraternal benefit society dedicated to helping members achieve financial security through life insurance while supporting the Catholic community through fraternal outreach. We're in your rectory today. This is a very special place to me because I'm staring at the picnic table where I made my first confession.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Listen. Well, hey, you know, speaking of first confessions, today's the anniversary of my first communion.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, so 32 years ago or so?
Yeah.
Something wow. Like 3 years ago.
You just turned 41.
Yeah.
And now we're celebrating your... That's about right.
Yeah. So I calculate that I've received Holy Communion 8,348 times.
Wow, that's very accurate.
it's a rough estimate. I mean, my family, we went to Mass every Sunday and Holy Day growing up. And then about the time I was in college, I started going to an additional daily Mass each week. And so, you know, add that. And then about the time I was 25 and serving on net, then I started going to Mass every single day. And then when I was ordained a priest, now it's like... multiple times a day.
Wow, that really adds up.
Yeah.
That's a lot of Jesus.
It's a lot of Jesus. I should be holier than I am.
that's amazing.
How many times have you received Holy Communion?
Probably close to that in the last 3 years. If I went every day over the last 3 years, I wouldn't even be at like an eighth of that.
Right.
Golly, that's amazing.
And yet, you know, the saints say one Holy Communion is enough to make us a saint.
One.
You know.
Wow.
Yeah. So I should really be holier.
This is the rub, and this is something that bothers me as we get into this conversation. You know, having not encountered Christ that way, in the way He intended to be encountered until He came back, physically at least. Until, you know, 3 years ago, after I receive communion and I receive on the knees, on the tongue, not to be that guy, but because I just, the idea of it, like touching my hand and then anything being left, I've tried to teach this to my boys. I have them watch carefully, you know, when the priest is preparing and how he wipes things out and how he, I don't know what that little a gold platter is.
Yeah, the patent,
okay? And he takes his thumb and he makes sure it's all in there into the cup, and then he drinks it, you know, because if it's really Christ, you don't just treat it like a cracker.
Right.
You have to treat it a certain way. So I'm just, for my own conscience, but also for my kids who are watching me, like I want them to understand that when we walk into church, we don't dress like we're going to Target.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And when we go to receive Jesus, we don't walk up there like I'm taking a ticket. But I also recognize that other people's conscience might not be there. And so I don't want to be the guy that's like, So after I receive, I go back and I just kneel and I close my eyes because I'm the guy that I like sitting up front. It helps my kids. There's a lot more to look at.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
depending on which parish you might be at on a Sunday, but ideally there's a lot more for them to look at, and they just seem a lot more engaged. And you can smell, you know, the smells a lot more. So we sit up front. So, but then I'm tempted to want to just watch everybody as they're
right.
in line receiving. And I haven't told my sons not to, because they seem fascinated by this moment where people are coming up and receiving Christ.
Right.
So they're just in a different place. But I'm baffled. I'm really baffled. But again, I'm coming from such a different perspective. Like, this is Christ. And part of it's been comforting. Like, okay, so Catholics can have similar problems that Protestants can have with just closeness to Jesus and all of that. And I recognize that there's been decades of really bad catechesis throughout the country, maybe throughout the world. I know Latin America is really struggling right now. The Catholic Church down there is really struggling. Hence, Latin America is really struggling. But that moment is so profound. And I'm trying to even open my imagination and let it capture my imagination as to what's happening.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, right? Like, we saw this especially during COVID, the polemicization of receiving Holy Communion. Mm-hmm. It's like, whoa. Like, so I grew up in the 80s. You know, my first communion was in the 80s and received on the hand. Like, I didn't even know receiving on the tongue was a thing. Huh. Like, I remember the first time I even heard of this, we were on a Boy Scout weekend, and so we'd always find a church to go to, and so we were out somewhere, you know, in the middle of nowhere camping, and we showed up in our Boy Scout uniforms and went to Mass, and some of the guys came back and said, the priest wouldn't let me receive communion on the hand and made me stick out my tongue, and I was like, and I don't remember if, like, I was tipped off, and so I just went up and stuck out my tongue, or if he didn't do that to me, or what. But I have this kind of memory of, like, that was the first time it might have been just because he didn't recognize us and didn't know, you know, whatever. I don't know. But that's the first time I never saw anybody receive on the tongue. I never heard of anybody receiving on the tongue. And here's the fascinating thing. It was not until 1977 that the Pope gave permission for the people to receive on the hand.
Hmm.
So from 1977 to 1989, when I received, 12 years, and complete reversal, And so now, especially during COVID, we heard all this, like, no, it's safer to receive on the tongue. No, it's safer to receive on the hand. No, people who receive on the tongue are killing people. No, people receiving on the hand are they don't believe in Jesus. And it's like, whoa.
It was wild.
Crazy.
It was wild. I mean, revealing.
Yeah.
Revealing.
And the sacrament, Holy Communion, and it's becoming, like, so disunifying.
Sounds like Jesus. Jesus.
And every priest had it from both sides, you know, like, huh. I can't believe you're allowing people to receive on the tongue. I can't believe you're allowing people you're not allowing people to receive on the tongue in some places. And
wow.
It's like, wow.
Isn't the polarization of Christ just sort of resounds through time?
Yeah.
It's very interesting to me, because in becoming Catholic, I experienced that just quoting Christ in scripture to friends who are not Catholic, like, just quoting him became extremely polarizing. It's no surprise, I guess, that he remains polarized.
So, but I think it's actually worthwhile today to discuss, to talk about that. Like, what's the history of this?
Yeah. So I'm stunned that it was Pope St. John Paul the Great.
No, right before that, Pope Paul VI.
Oh, I was going to say, that seems like not a Pope St. John Paul VI.
But it has its own. So let's go back. So we'll go back. Sometimes people like to point to the Last Supper as the first Mass, which it's not really the first Mass. You know, it has to be understood in the context of Calvary, and really the Mass proper doesn't happen until after the resurrection, after the ascension, really. So the point to, like, well, Jesus didn't put the Eucharist on the apostles' tongue. He gave it to their hands. True.
Yeah.
Right. People also point to the practice in the early church. We read in the Acts of the Apostles, the breaking of the bread. It seems pretty clear that people were sitting around tables and, you know, breaking bread, and the apostles are coming to celebrating the Eucharist. And then as it develops, even by as soon as, the Didache talks about Mass, the Justin Martyr talks about Mass, and by then, we already see much more of the ritualization. You know, if you have a house full of 30 people, you can do things a little bit differently. Once you start having 40, 50, 60, 100, 200 people, well, it has to become ritualized, just in the same way that the Passover, which used to be, first Passover was a meal, and now became more of a ritual celebration that included still a meal. So as the Mass becomes what it is, and more like what it is today, we saw a change. But even in the time of St. John Chrysostom and other early church fathers, Venerable Bede, we hear them talking about receiving communion on the hand. And that's true. As far as we can tell, for the first five centuries, maybe the first six centuries, it was customary to receive communion on the hand. In the West, in the East, it was always a little bit different.
Huh.
Yeah. And since we're not Eastern Catholics, we don't have to worry about that right now. We can talk about that some other time.
Fair enough. Part two.
Yeah. But, you know, so they would receive on the hand. But, Jeremy, ask me how they received on the hand.
How did they receive on the hand, Father?
That's a good question, Jeremy. I'm glad you asked that. Because it wasn't the way that in most churches today we receive, where you walk up the center aisle in a line and you come face to face with the priest or the extraordinary minister or the deacon, and you put out your hand and then you walk away while you're putting Jesus into your mouth, right? It wasn't like that. It was kneeling. Probably at some sort of, I don't know if there's a rail or just up at the front of the church, but or in front of the minister, the priest, you were kneeling. Your hand was first purified, so it was washed. Your hand was washed. So probably one of the acolytes would come along, wash your hand, and then the host was placed on your hand, and then you did not pick up the host with your other hand and place it in your mouth. You bent your head down, you know, kind of like you're drinking water out of your hand.
Yeah.
You bent your head down to your hand and basically licked the host, the bread, the species of bread into your mouth.
That's what I've had to do the two or three times that I've been like forced to receive on the hand.
This was the tradition. And then afterwards, the acolyte would come back around and purify your hand again into a sacred vessel, so any of the fragments were collected. Now, of course, you're talking about crumblier bread back then as well. You know, we have pretty streamlined, like, you know, hosts or
cracker-like hosts.
You know, but it was always unleavened, and so it doesn't have a ton of crumbs, but there's always crumbs. There's always crumbs, and so there's always risk of profanation. And so this is how communion was conducted. It's
that must have taken a lot of time too, if you got 600 or 700 people.
Right.
And had their hands cleaned.
You know, yeah. So it's a kind of a big process, and you can kind of imagine. And so we've talked about this too before, where there's been these times in the history of the church where everybody's receiving communion, almost nobody's receiving communion. Everybody's, you know, and so I'm not sure which phase we're in at this point, but it's safe to say that not everybody was coming up for Holy Communion, you know? So it's not like you have a congregation of 200 people and 200 people are coming up for communion. Maybe 100 of them are coming up. Maybe 50 of them are coming up. So I think this shows us something. Like, yeah, the hand, it's not like my hand is evil.
Yeah, less profane than my tongue.
Right. Like, yeah, St. James doesn't mess around with sins of the tongue.
Correct.
Yeah. The tongue has probably caused me more trips to the confessional than my hands have.
Yes.
You know.
That's a good point.
So, yeah, so it's nothing to do with nothing strictly speaking to do with that, but the way, I mean, I just think of that. So, in my own personal history, this is I can't remember. So I grew up receiving on the hand, and then at some point, I think it was around the time I started going to daily mass, I started receiving on the tongue, and I can't remember why.
Hmm.
I just remember that it was around that time, because I remember that the priest would put communion on kind of the side of your tongue, which was always kind of weird. Like, why'd he put it on the side of my tongue? He's like afraid of my tongue or something.
Kind of got to flip it.
Yeah.
Back.
And then there's, I remember too, one of the, a certain priest he just had no qualm. He didn't even try not to hit your tongue. So it's just like you had to time it just perfectly. As soon as he's coming in, you just pulled back ever so slightly, and he would miss your tongue, and the host would. But at any rate, I started receiving on the tongue at that point, and you know, not sure why, but there was just something in my heart that is just, I don't know, there's something more peaceful about it for me. It felt more sacred, kind of like you say. I'm like, I'm
more
not
reverent.
I'm not taking a ticket. I'm not asking for a piece of candy. I'm not holding out my hand for a quarter.
Under no circumstances would I ever kneel down and put my tongue out for someone to put something in my mouth,
except for
communion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the only time that somebody that we're fed. The only time we're fed is when we're either really, really young or really, really old.
Or really, really sick.
Or really, really sick. In other words, when we're helpless.
Yeah. It's extremely vulnerable position.
But that's actually the beautiful thing. Correct. Is like when it comes to receiving grace, I am completely helpless.
Yeah.
I cannot take grace. I cannot force God's hand to give me grace. I can only receive.
Yeah.
And so whether I'm receiving on the hand or on the tongue, right? But like, yeah, there's lots of instances where I receive on the hand. There's none that I receive on the tongue.
Yeah, words are really important, and words affect how we think and then how we behave. So when we're talking about receiving, like, yes, a gift, someone hands me a gift and I would take my hands and I would take the gift and I would put it in my lap or open the gift or whatever. But something to this level, I feel there's not necessarily an exchange happening. Certainly I'm offering something and I'm offering my faith there in that moment. But he makes such a great point with grace. Like, there's nothing I can do. And so what better way to just sit down and on my knees, totally vulnerable, and stick my tongue out and let the Lord place himself there.
All right.
Right?
Right.
I mean, it's super, super vulnerable, and I need that right now.
I would say as a priest, this is interesting. There's something about when I give somebody communion on the tongue. It's different for me as a priest, and I feel more fatherly in that instance.
I bet.
I feel more humbled in that instance too. It's like, wow, I'm giving them something that they can't have without me.
Huh.
You know, like, you can show up to church, so the priest doesn't show up and do mass.
Yeah. You can't walk up the tabernacle Eucharist with the key and open it up and pull it out and feed yourself.
Right. Or if Jesus just, nobody's in the tabernacle, then, like, you know, and so, like, it's just this very, like, wow, these are my spiritual children, you know, and like, there's a really beautiful sensation. It's just different. It's just different. And then imagine, like, as your kids are growing up, there's a certain, you know, like, wow, you know, like nursing mothers, for instance.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
They're like, this is so amazing.
Yeah. When that's gone, when that
right, there's a loss.
There's a loss.
Right. Yeah. But as spiritual beings, we don't grow up from our dependence on God. So there's the difference.
For sure.
So I don't want to paint a picture like, must receive, kneeling on the tongue, cannot. Okay, so we're not saying that. We're just kind of giving the lay of the land. And so as the church progresses into the Middle Ages, and it's like the lay of the landscape was different. You know, the church is now the center of European culture.
Right.
People are coming to church who, you know, aren't necessarily Catholic, aren't necessarily living their Catholic faith, or it's just totally different. And so the what developed was receiving communion on the tongue. They're still kneeling, but receiving communion on the tongue. And part of it was just you knew that somebody's not walking off with the host in their hand. Because there's so many people now, it's just a bigger operation.
Oh, yeah, there are Satanists that try to get their hands on the host.
Yeah, no, that's true. Even today, yeah. So, and I think maybe it's, you know, you just got to put your mindset in, and you got to put your mind if you're trying to think of like, how can I receive more worthily, and you know, the priest was ordained and his hands were anointed with holy oil so that he could touch the sacred vessels, and everything else that touches the sacred vessel is consecrated. And yes, Jesus is coming to me, but let's make this as easy and streamlined as possible and not have any unnecessary steps, and let's just straight on the tongue. So however this develops, by the Middle Ages, everybody's receiving on the tongue, and this is basically church law.
Huh.
So by the time Trent comes along, it is the not just the norm but the law to receive on the tongue. You know, you read the old liturgical books and things like this. There's one interesting law that if the priest was distributing Holy Communion to a cloister of nuns, so he's reaching his hand through the grating, the grill, the nuns are on one side and he's on the other side because nobody was allowed into the cloister.
Right.
So he's reaching through the opening of the grate and he giving communion. If the host, so this is written down in places, the host were to fall onto the ground, it's actually the priest can actually enter into the cloister without being excommunicated rather than the sister to pick up the host with her.
Wow.
With
her so hand. I did not know that priests did not, could not still enter cloistered?
I think in certain circumstances for like last rites and things, but yes, yeah. Like nobody's allowed inside. So it's wow. Just, I mean, this isn't to say this is right or wrong, or it's just like, that's how seriously we were about the sacred host and kind of our recognition of who the priest represents.
Right.
You know? So from Trent on, church law, you have to receive on the hand. I mean, on the tongue. Even the liturgical books in the 1970s, so after the Vatican Council, even the church, so the new missal that we have today, the rubrics in that missal said, when you are distributing communion, the priest places the host on the tongue, saying the body of Christ. Hmm. And there was no mention of receiving on the hand, even in 1970 and 1975.
Wow.
It's about this time that groups of people in different places, mostly in Europe, begin to receive on the hand without permission. Just start receiving on the hand. And I think it had to do with this kind of, you know, so one of the things that the Vatican Council did emphasize, rightly, was the priesthood of all the faithful.
Right.
By virtue of your baptism, you're a priest, right? You're not a ministerial priest, though. And right. So there's differences.
But just like the Israelites were a nation of priests.
Right.
Moses called them a nation of priests, but they had a ministerial priesthood.
Right, because of their disobedience.
Right.
You know, and so whole nother tangent, but so your priesthood is different than my priesthood. But there's these, you know, scholars and theologians who are pushing this, which might be a valid thing to push. It might even not be, it might not have even been necessarily a bad thing to suggest, but to start doing it without permission,
right.
That's actually a problem.
Yep.
You know, and so you had these groups of people and became large groups of people. And so the bishops start writing to Rome and saying, "Hey, what do we do? You know, I have all these people that are receiving on the hand. I can't get them to stop. You know, can we have permission for them to receive on the hand?" Hmm. Basically, it's like, can I get retroactive permission for them to do what they've already been doing out of disobedience? Now, I shouldn't say that everybody's doing out of disobedience. Certainly some people are doing out of disobedience.
Sure.
And then some people are just like, oh, I guess we're doing
this.
Yeah,
it's one thing to do it intentionally. It's another to not right. know.
And if the pastor gets up and says, hey, we're allowed to receive on the hand now, and you're in the pew and you're like, oh, okay, well, I guess that's what we're doing. Then you're not at fault.
Right.
And there's nothing intrinsically sinful about receiving on the hand. Right. But if that priest or that scholar, that theologian, that bishop knew that that's not permissible, then there is fault on him, you know?
Right.
So at any rate, you get all these bishops writing to the Pope, Pope Paul VI, and saying, hey, can we just get permission for this? Pope says, no, I don't think that's a good idea. They keep pressuring him, keep writing letters saying like, what do we do? Finally, he writes back. He says, all right, if this is already happening and your bishop's conference, the whole conference, so like here it'd be the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, USCCB, if the whole conference is together in this and you write to me to ask permission, I will grant special permission that you can give to your people to receive on the hand.
Hmm.
That permission was, that was in 1977, and then overnight, every single country basically, with very few exceptions, has sent asking permission. And some quite frankly didn't ask permission and just was like, okay, that's what everybody's doing. But interestingly enough, I mean, the liturgical books, like right now I'm holding the current missal, Roman missal in my hand that has the prayers of the Mass in it, and the instructions of the Mass. And in it, it says, when the priest distributes communion, he distributes on the tongue, or in those places where it is permissible, on the hands.
Interesting.
So even today, even this, you know, this current missal.
I would say that 99% of people do not receive on the tongue.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that's probably pretty accurate.
Somewhere between 97% and 99%. So this is interesting to me.
And it's like I don't think the war is between receiving on the tongue or receiving on the hand. I think the war, like we've talked about before, is receiving reverently,
right,
knowingly, in the right state and the right disposition, and not receiving that way.
Right.
If receiving on the tongue while you're kneeling helps you have the right disposition, that's great. But if you're receiving on the tongue and kneeling and you got mortal sin in your soul, it doesn't help you at all. You're still eating and drinking condemnation.
Correct.
You know?
Correct.
Whereas I know some extremely holy people. There's this convent that I go to and visit regularly, do my retreats at, and there's several of the nuns who receive on the hand, but the way that they receive on the hand is like, whoa.
Huh.
You know, it's like they're like, the way that they look at the host, they're like, this is my spouse.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, this is like a really holy moment.
Interesting.
You know,
see, it can be done.
It can certainly be done. And I'm not going to be the one to say that which of my parishioners are and aren't receiving worthily, but the war is not receiving on the hand or receiving on the tongue.
Yeah, that is something you lose with the tongue, is the ability to gaze. Hmm. You only get a moment, you know, from the priest's hand to the tongue, to gaze. That's very interesting. I think. So to me, there's two things here that are really fascinating. One is reality and how reality affects posture.
Hmm.
Because for most, this is the case for American Christians, whether you're Protestant or Catholic, the seriousness with which you take your religion and your faith in your daily life. And by seriousness, I mean how much of that spiritual reality you accept and acknowledge as being real. So there's way more spiritual reality in Catholicism with the sacraments. We have these sacraments that somehow, some way, invisibly, mystically, something physical, whether it's a host or the voice of the priest in confession or the water or the anointing oil, something physical affects something spiritual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
in
yeah,
a real absolutely. Way. And there seems to be, among a lot of Catholics, just kind of an ignorance around spiritual reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can understand if you didn't know this is some kind of special thing and it's in my hand and I'm going to make a little sign of the cross. I see a lot of people do that. They'll step aside and take it with their other hand, put it in their tongue and look at the cross and make a sign of the cross. And
right.
It's kind of a reverent
right.
act there.
Right.
But I had to, in order to just get rid of some really bad habits, I had to just kind of immerse myself in the sacramental reality, which is very Catholic and certainly Orthodox and maybe to a smaller degree Anglican and Lutheran, maybe a little bit, you know, but there's like this spiritual reality. And when we really connected with that, it's interesting how that affects your body posture in certain moments. And this could be true in life in general. If I'm really sick, my posture's kind of down, you know, if I'm really excited, my posture's kind of up. When we're talking about Christ, what should my posture be before the Lord? And in some way, he's here physically, substantially, not just spiritually, but substantially. And if you're going to the White House, for instance, you're going to meet the president. Whether you like the president or not, if you're going to go to the White House, you don't go in pajamas and Crocs, right? You put nice clothes on. And when you stand in front of him to shake his hand, you don't look the other way.
You give him nucks.
The floor. Give him nucks, right? You don't go in for like an awkward hug, you know? There's a way with which your posture represents the enormity of that moment.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I think we should do another episode on this because I think
I agree.
We could just keep talking about this. But I think that maybe the takeaway for right now is like, if you've never thought about it, you know, like here's some backstory, here's some history. There's, you know, intentionality. Like, why am I receiving on the hand? Mm. Is that the, what do I have to, I mean, because I see people who start receiving on the tongue and it's like, wow, there's something going on in their spiritual life. And that's the direction that it's been taken.
It's not for show. It's not a competition.
Right. So yeah, let's talk about it again next time.
Let's come back to part two. We'll see you folks.
At Catholic Order of Foresters, we're committed to bringing Catholic values to life and financially protecting Catholic families right here in Minnesota. Our members enjoy benefits like scholarship eligibility and peace of mind knowing their family is secure, even if something happens to them. Each year, thousands join us to support people in need through our Feeding God's Children events, spirituality tap-ins, and mission trips. Wouldn't you love to be a part of an organization that embodies your Catholic values? Find out how you can be a part of Catholic Order of Foresters by calling General Agent Brian Marketon at 763-658-4009. That's Brian at 763-658-4009.